Good morning to everyone here. I hope you all enjoyed your extra hour of sleep. I was looking forward to mine this morning, and then I found out yesterday that I needed to fill in. So my extra hour of sleep was spent driving from Birmingham down here this morning. So didn't get that extra hour like I was hoping for. But that's all right. I'm excited to be here, thankful for the opportunity. And really glad that I get the chance to see everyone, and I'm thankful for you all coming out here this morning. If you're visiting, I am not the regular guy here or a member here. I actually live in Fultondale, Alabama, with my wife. We would be glad to have you there at the Fultondale Church anytime that you're in the area. We're only like half a mile or a mile off the interstate, so if you ever want to stop by, we should be in there. If we're not, then there's something wrong. But I am excited to be here, and I hope the lesson this morning will be something that is beneficial to everyone and can help us all. One of the questions that a lot of people debate in society or in the world today, in the church, is questions about heaven. I think we all have a lot of questions about it. It's one of those that maybe it's one of those that you just talk about with your friends and just, you know, you all just talk about maybe what's it going to be like, who all is going to be there, what are we going to do when we're there. I've heard some people bring that, like, isn't it going to be kind of boring, like there's no TV, I mean, there's nothing fun to do there. But I think we all kind of have these thoughts about just like, what is it all going to be like? And we try to figure it out, knowing good and well we're probably never going to come up with a good answer for a lot of the questions that we have. But we all wonder and have questions about heaven. And the disciples, or the apostles that followed Jesus, they were the same way. They had the same questions about heaven. And there's a reason that they did. You can go ahead and open your Bibles to Matthew. I'm going to try to make it pretty easy on everyone this morning. We're going to be just in the book of Matthew. You can turn to chapter 18 when you get a chance. I've titled this People of Heaven, and that may not make much sense now, but I hope it will at the end of the lesson. Also, put the website up here, and just a quick mention about that. The reason that I put that up here, and I try to do it when I speak at other places if I remember to, is that I am shocked by how many people I talk to that go to church websites and listen to sermons. You think that it's just, you know, some deacon is putting them on the website and no one really cares about it, but people do go to these websites. It's a good thing to just tell your friends, hey, you can go check this out and listen to this sermon. Really good tool, so that's why I put that up there to remind people about that. But one of the reasons that the apostles were curious about heaven is that Jesus talked about it a lot. In Matthew 13, and we're not going to turn there and discuss these passages necessarily, but Jesus in Matthew chapter 13, he talked about the kingdom of heaven, and he said that the kingdom of heaven is like several things. He first said in Matthew 13:24, it's like a man who sowed seed in his field. Matthew 13, verse 31 and 32, he talks about the kingdom of heaven being like a grain of mustard seed. And Jesus explains these a little more than I am. I just, real quick, the kingdom of heaven is like leaven that was hidden and then grew. See that in verse 33. It was like treasure hidden in a field. Matthew 13, and verse 44. Matthew 13, verse 45 and 46, it's like a merchant in search of pearls. And in Matthew 13, verse 47, it was like a net that caught fish. So if you talk about something that many times, your followers are going to be like, okay, we get the point. This is a big deal. The kingdom of heaven is something that we need to pay attention to. So what was their question? I brought up some of the questions that we may have had. You know, what are we going to do there? Who all is going to be there? Are we going to be able to talk to God? Can we ask questions to Paul and Abraham and stuff like that? Are we going to get all our questions answered? What was the disciples' question? The thing that they always worried about, who was going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Turn to Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18. The followers of Jesus were very concerned with this kingdom, thinking that it was going to be a physical type of kingdom. So their question, which isn't, if you don't know what the kingdom of heaven is about, it's not an unreasonable question. And in Matthew 18, verse 1, at that time the disciples came to Jesus saying, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? So that's what they want to know. Then in verses 2 through 4, let's see what Jesus said in answer to that. And calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, "Truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." So I titled my sermon, "The People of Heaven," and Jesus pretty much answered it. So I have a little bit more time to kill up here, so I can't just end my sermon here since Jesus kind of did already answer it for us. But my idea for the sermon, "The People of Heaven," is that the people didn't seem to understand this concept, because in the next chapter we see that Jesus is having to explain the kingdom of heaven again. And that's what I want us to look at in Matthew chapter 19. You can go ahead and flip over there if you will. In Matthew chapter 19, we're going to see three situations that come up. And we're probably all familiar with all three of these situations. But in Matthew chapter 18, we saw they said their one question about heaven: who's going to be the greatest? And he said, "Become like children." Children and those who are like children, those are the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Those are the people of heaven, those that can become like children. But in Matthew chapter 19, we see they still didn't really get it. So I want to look at these three situations and see who are these people of heaven that we see. And the first is in Matthew chapter 19, starting in verse 13. Matthew chapter 19 and verse 13. You'll follow along with me. "Then children were brought to him that he might lay his hands on them and pray. And before we go into 14, the disciples rebuked the people." So, I mean, literally one chapter previous, he's talked about the people of heaven, the people of the kingdom of heaven, should become like children. And then one chapter later, they're already rebuking them for bringing children to him. So keep on reading. "But Jesus said, 'Let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven.' And he laid his hands on them and went away." So it kind of seems a bit repetitive from Matthew chapter 18, when Jesus had already answered this, but they still didn't understand that the kingdom of heaven is for those who are children and for those who make themselves like children. And what is so great about kids or children? Depending on the age of your kids, you may not have much of an answer for how great they are. If they're like 14 to 17, you probably don't have many good reasons for why they're good. I say that just kidding. There's a lot of good kids out there. But what is so great about children? Is it the fact that they are so much more willing to forgive than adults are? Think about the grudges that a lot of adults, a lot of people my age, your age, however old you are, how many people that you know, how many grudges they hold. Children don't do that. Children don't discriminate the same way that adults do. My mom told me that one time my grandmother, who has moved in with them recently, said something to her one time. I don't remember how old I was when she said it, but she said, "Whatever happened to the Kyle that could get along with everybody?" And I still remember when she told me. I don't remember. It's been several years since she told me that. And the reason being, when I was, 8, 9, 10 years old, I could get along with everybody. It didn't matter what interest that person had. Didn't matter what type of person they was. I could get along with them. I didn't, not giving labels to anybody. But then as you get older, what are the types of people that you start associating with? It's people that are like you. People that maybe you think that this group of people is weird over here, and your group of friends, you're the only normal ones. Kids aren't like that. Children aren't like that. And I think Jesus wanted us to know that. One example, I saw a perfect example of this Friday night. Amanda and I went to a wedding in Georgia, and we weren't family of the people there or anything. And afterwards, we were asked to help clean up by the owner of the facility there. So I'm thinking, I was like, so he's telling us, oh, we have to move these benches over here, and you got to put the covers on the chairs and stack them up all on top of the table. And I'm thinking, like, hey, this, you own this place, you do it, or your employees do it. So I'm thinking, like, we need to send this guy an invoice for the, you know, half an hour I spent helping him, and reimburse us for that. There's a little 8-year-old, 9-year-old kid there that, without being told to, was going and picking up all the plates at every table and taking them to the side so that they could be washed. Kids are just so much more willing to help others sometimes than adults are. And I think that's the point that Jesus is trying to say. And Jesus is having to explain this to people because these Pharisees and these disciples that came up, they had such a worldly view of this kingdom that they thought it was all about all these outward things that they could do. So when they brought the kids to him, they're like, Jesus, these kids can't do anything for you. These children can't do anything for you. Jesus had to make sure these are the people that the kingdom of heaven is for. The second situation that came up is this rich young man in the next few verses. I'm sure we all know this story as well. Let's read in Matthew 19, starting in verse 16. And behold, a man came up to him saying, Teacher, what good deed must I do to have eternal life? And he said to him, Why do you ask me about what is good? There is only one who is good. If you would enter life, keep the commandments. He said to him, Which ones? And Jesus said, You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, honor your father and mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. The young man said to him, All these things I have kept. What do I still lack? Jesus said to him, If you would be perfect, go, sell what you possess and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. So this young man had it all figured out, right? He had done everything. And Jesus said, Sell what you have, give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. In verse 22, when the young man heard this, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. The second type of person in heaven, the people of heaven, is that those who love others by being generous. See, this young man, I think one of the scariest things about this passage, one of the commandments that he said that he had already obeyed, in verse 19, it says, Honor your father and mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So he thought he had that commandment locked down. But when Jesus said, Sell what you have and give it to those people, all of a sudden he didn't want to do that. I think that's scary to think about, that maybe we don't love others as much as we think. In our country, I don't know if any of you watched the debate, or I think the debate the other night. I think that was probably the only 30 minutes in my life I've ever watched a political debate. May not ever watch another one again. I didn't get a whole lot out of it. But one of the issues that always comes up, and this isn't just in 2015. This is any political conversation, is taxes. That's always the big thing, is taxes and how the government is taking too much from us and how I wish they wouldn't, how I wish they would just not take anything out of our paycheck. It's illegal to have a state income or whatever it may be. And there may be some, there's probably some legitimacy to that the government takes our money and then they just, don't spend it wisely and there's frustration with that. But I want to just imagine a hypothetical world. Now, hypothetical, but it's never going to happen. Imagine a world where there were no more taxes. We all got our wish, and we don't get taxed ever again. So that when you look at your paycheck and you get the gross amount and your net amount, it's no more net amount. You get that gross amount. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? So imagine that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we're all making this much more money because there's no more taxes. What are you going to do with that extra money? Are you wanting to pay less taxes so that you can buy yourself more stuff? Or would you look for opportunities? Oh, now I have so much more opportunity to help others. Like I said, this is a hypothetical situation, and I'm not, you know, taking one side or the other in this argument, but I want us to think about those times that we are getting blessed, times that we come into a good opportunity. Are we saying, hey, I can get that new whatever it may be? Are we looking for opportunities to help others? And I'm considering this on an individual basis and being generous to others. Because Jesus was talking to this young man as one individual. You sell what you have and give to the poor. I think a lot of times I have justified my what I consider generosity by saying, I give every Sunday. I write the check and that money goes into the collection, and maybe it supports other preachers, maybe some over in other countries. Maybe it helps a widow that needs it. That's my being generous to others by giving to the Lord. I want you to think about that. That you think, or I thought, that I was being generous by doing the bare minimum that God has asked of me. God asks us or commands us to give every first day of the week, and that's what I thought I was being generous by just following that command. And we need to obey that command, but there's so many more opportunities we need to look for to be generous to others when we can. That can come in the form of time, money, food, you know, whatever it may be. Not to get too specific, I think we see here when Jesus talked to this man that the people of heaven are those that are generous in helping others. And the last is, in the next few verses, started in Matthew chapter 19, verse 27. Before we see this, so Jesus told this man, you need to sell what you have, give to the poor, and follow me. And we don't really know how it turns out, but it seems like he didn't do that. He went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. So then Peter chimes in. Peter's always the one that chimes in these situations, it seems like. But Peter's like, okay, so you told that guy to do this, and he didn't do it, but look at what we've done. We've given up our jobs and everything to follow you. So what position will we have in the kingdom? Look at Matthew 19, verse 27. And Peter said in reply, see, we have left everything and followed you. What then will we have? Jesus said to them, truly I say to you, in the new world, when the Son of Man will sit on his glorious throne, you who have followed me will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or children or lands for my name's sake will receive 100-fold and will inherit eternal life. Now, before I keep reading, if you stop, if Jesus cut off his words there, it does sound like his disciples here will get a better place in heaven, right? It's that they will receive 100-fold and will inherit eternal life. So it sounds like Peter and his apostles are going to get a better position in the kingdom of heaven. But let's keep reading, and we're going to go into verse 20 and see the parable that he tells these apostles. Matthew 19, verse 30, but many who are first will be last, and the last first. For the kingdom of heaven is like a master of a house who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And going out about the third hour, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And to them he said, you go into the vineyard too, and whatever is right I will give you. So they went. Going out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour, he did the same. And about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing. And he said to them, why do you stand here idle all day? They said to him, because no one has hired us. He said to them, you go into the vineyard too. And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the laborers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last up to the first. And when those hired about the 11th hour came, each of them received a denarius. Now when those hired first came, they thought they would receive more. But each of them also received a denarius. And on receiving it, they grumbled at the master of the house, saying, these last worked only 1 hour, And you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat. But he replied to one of them, Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last worker as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or do you begrudge my generosity? So the last will be first, and the first last. The kingdom of heaven is for people that are humble. That's why Jesus had to tell this parable. It's because Peter was thinking him and the apostles were going to be better than everyone else there. But that's not how it's so. I was thinking of an analogy to this, how it would hit home with us. Think about it at your job when it comes to maybe vacation time or paid time off. Now imagine that, you know, you get told that first 10 years you'll get 2 weeks, and then your next 10 years you'll get 3 weeks, and your last 10 years you'll get 4 weeks. So you're 30 years, and you'll end up with 4 weeks vacation in your last 10 years of your 30 years of working there. Now imagine you put in your time, and you know, you get excited when you get that 20th year, you've got your 4 weeks off, and you're, you know, just going right along. Now all of a sudden the company institutes some different policy, and now all of a sudden the new hires start out with 4 weeks. So these people that just started 5 days ago, they get the same amount that you do. I think that's kind of similar to what the parable that Jesus is taking. I'd be kind of upset about that. Wouldn't you go into HR and be like, hey, hang on a second. You're telling me that this guy gets the same thing that I get, and I've put in, you know, 25 years, whatever it may be? That's basically the parable that Jesus told, just in maybe a real-world scenario. And it's hard for us to understand that line of thinking. Think about the worst person that you know. Hopefully they're not in this building. But think about the person that you think... I'm not saying someone that annoys you. That wouldn't be the worst person that you know. It, a lot of people's probably would think of someone like Hitler, somebody like that. Now imagine that you die and you go to heaven, and if you're walking into heaven, however it works out, and you see Hitler going in with you, how would you feel about that? Feel about something like that? Or if you thought of somebody else, how would you feel if you saw that person going into heaven with you? Would you be angry? Like, wasn't after all that he did, he's going into heaven? And I'm not trying to say that Hitler would be going to heaven. I'm just trying to say, if someone lived a horrible life, but they made their life right with God right before the end, would you still be mad at them because of that? I had my grandmother's father became a Christian when he was 92 or 93. Okay, he had basically been an atheist before that, agnostic, atheist all before that. I remember as a 10-year-old child thinking, so he got to do anything he wanted for 93 years, and now he gets to go to heaven. That was my thought process as a child. And I think if we're not careful, we can sometimes take that line of thinking of, well, I've been a Christian for much longer than these other people. I'm a better person than them. And I think Jesus is trying to humble these apostles here by saying that. And the reason that we're all equal when we go there is because we all needed the same blood to get there. I went to Auburn for 4 years and got to hear Larry Rouse preach a lot. And I don't remember everything that he said throughout that time. But one of the one thing that I always remember that he said is that imagine that you have an opportunity to defend your case before God. And he says, why do you deserve to go to heaven? And what, think about the first thing out of your mouth, what you would say. Would you say, well, I got baptized when I was 12. I faithfully attended services. I faithfully taught people like you asked me. And what Larry said is that if we say anything else except but by the blood of Christ, then we gave the wrong answer. The reason that everyone is equal in heaven, that no one is better than anyone else in heaven, is because we all needed the same blood of Christ to get there. And that's what Jesus was trying to hammer home with these people. And I think that's his main point, is that the people in heaven are people that aren't selfish. If you'd like, you can turn to Matthew 25. Matthew 25, verses 37 through 40. I think these are the people of heaven that Jesus is describing here in this parable. You see, he said, "Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me." As we went through the people of heaven, the first is for those children and those who are like children. The kingdom of heaven is for those who love others by being generous. And the kingdom of heaven is for those who are humble and don't consider themselves better than anyone else there. If you'd like, you can go ahead and get out your psalm books to the invitation psalm. I believe 348 was the number. To close up, I want to read from Acts chapter 2 real quick. Right when the disciple first became Christians in Acts chapter 2, and I want you to see how they reacted upon becoming Christians. "And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And all came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done to the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people." I think that's about as good of a description as the people of heaven can be without actually being there. People that were willing to give away their possessions, have all things in common with their brethren, and praising God. Those are the people of heaven, is how those Christians were responding there. And I offer that as an invitation to say that that's the opportunity that we all have, to be a part of something like that. It's an opportunity that you have to be a part of something here with the brethren here, but most importantly, to be a part of all Christians everywhere. That's who the Lord was adding. The Lord was adding people to His church, and His church is going to be the people of heaven that go there one day. And if you would like to become part of that, if you need to be baptized into His Son, if you need to make something right through the prayers of everyone here, whatever we can help you with this morning, I would ask that you do that right now as we stand and sing.